There has been a lot of talk about our health service this week, with the Health Minister, Michelle O'Neill, revealing her plan to tackle waiting lists. Well, rather than patients waiting to get into hospitals, we have been looking into others who've been delayed getting out after treatment. In December, there were nearly 300 people still in hospital beds who were deemed medically fit to go home, but care packages could not be put into place in order to discharge them. Now, we can reveal this morning that up until November 2016, the longest wait for a care package in the Northern Trust was 210 days. In the Western Trust, it was 171 days, while in the Southern Trust, it was 53 days. Now, we have been working on this story since December, when our reporter Nicola Weir spoke to Margaret Gibson and Wilma McMillan. Now, both are struggling to secure care packages in order to bring their family members home.
He was terribly weak, couldn't eat, couldn't really stand or walk at all. And he was in the hospital for nearly 6 weeks. But the social worker in the hospital said she could not get me the care package that the physio and the OT, the occupational therapist, had said was necessary, which was two carers four times a day.
So you're 73 years old. You obviously want your husband home, but you need help to look after him.
Yes. When he is unstable on his feet, he needs help toileting. So that's where I need help, getting him washed and dressed and toileting him.
So when they said to you, look, he no longer requires hospital care, I suppose the first thing you said was, well, can I bring him home, and what care package can I have?
Well, there was no care package available. That was the whole thing. They were specifying that it had to be two people four times a day because of his level of mobility.
And that wasn't available, so you probably maybe said, well, he's going to have to stay in hospital. But you said he was moved to
intermediate. Well, they said to me that, would I consider an intermediate bed? And I said, I'd never thought about an intermediate bed. Would you explain to me what that was? So they said that it was a bed somewhere that he could go to get some more strength back and recover a bit more, but not take a hospital bed. And I said, where was it likely to be? So they told me Lisburn Intermediate Care Centre.
So we're coming up to nearly 2 weeks that he's in interim care, and you just want him home. Whenever you've asked about this care package, what have you been told?
Just told that there's nobody available.
And that means that your husband is then stuck in interim care rather than being home being cared for.
That's
by yourself.
Right.
So what is this doing to your husband? What has he been saying to you?
Well, it made him very depressed. He said to me, what have I done that you've put me in here? I asked for him to be reassessed. I said, I don't think that he needs two carers four times a day. I said, I think one carer would be sufficient. And I did ask the social worker, could we have maybe a carer in the middle of the day to help with toileting? And he said he didn't think that was a problem. So I have now set up the arrangement with the company that we used originally for a morning and an evening call and one in the middle of the day.
So you have decided to engage a private company that you're going to be paying the difference out of your own pocket, which is up to about £100 a week?
That's right. That's right.
And if you didn't have that money, Margaret, what would happen?
Well, my husband would have to stay where he is. You have no option, you know, and there are so many people who don't have the option. But we're fortunate that we can afford for some time to pay that. And hopefully he'll get to the stage where he'll not need help. And then we'll be able to stop it.
It must put a wee bit of a financial pressure on yourself whenever you're retired, that you're having to pay £100 a week. That's £400
a
month.
We're going to savings. We're going to savings. That's it. And the pot will run dry at some stage. You know, we were prudent when we were working, that we put some money past for a rainy day. Well, it's raining now, so we're going to that money. And it's money that we're not spending on ourselves. We are spending it on care for my husband, because that's where the need is.
And you're not the only one in this boat, because we've got another lady sitting here beside you, Wilma. This is a familiar tale for you, because you're sort of in a similar situation, aren't you?
Yes, that's right. My father went into hospital on the 14th of October.
And that was the Lagan Valley?
That's the Lagan Valley. And they deemed the spoke. My mum's into her 90th year now, and they deemed that Dad needed carers 4 times a day to help, you know, whenever he would be discharged. And it's 4 weeks now. Yesterday, from the social worker, put through the request for to get a care package put together for Dad in order that he could come home. And as yet, there's still nothing available.
So your father is able to come home, but yes, can't come home.
Yes, that's right. My dad is able to come home. He has come on really well, but he can't come home without the assistance. My mum, while she's great for her years, is just too much for her. And unfortunately, Dad's holding a hospital bed, which I'm sure could be better used. But we have no other option because we can't get the care package.
And we heard from Margaret that she was in a similar situation. Her husband was in a hospital bed, and they said, look, we can move into interim care. Is that a possibility, that to get your father moved to interim care? Have you been offered that?
Where Mum and Dad live comes under the Southern Trust. So the intermediate bed that Bob was able to go to isn't available to my dad. They then asked me, would he go into respite? But then when they looked at it, there was no beds available near me or that would be convenient for us to visit Dad. And in fact, they offered me Armagh, Portadown, Tandragee or Five Mile Town.
And you live just outside Annahilt, don't you?
Yeah, my mum lives in Canallan, outside Dromara. It's getting him down, and it's wearing my mother out because we're travelling to the hospital every day to go and see my father. And she is physically exhausted and, in fact, has been ill all over the weekend.
And what about the option that Margaret has taken to go privately?
Well, unfortunately, my mum and dad just can't afford to do that. We're not in a position, unfortunately, to be able to do that. Even with the respite care, some of the homes were requiring a top-up and it was up to the family to have to pay that. And my dad just said, well, there's no way I'm asking my children to have to start paying for me. So we're really between a rock and a hard place at the moment.
Now, we did ask the trusts involved in Robert Gibson and William Elliott's care for statements. The Southern Trust apologised to Mr Elliott and any other clients experiencing delays with their care packages. It added that recruiting and retaining domiciliary care workers, particularly in rural areas such as Dromara, is a challenge for both the trust and independent care providers. Meanwhile, the South Eastern Trust said Mr Gibson had been receiving a direct payment from the trust from the 1st of October, and this is to provide his care package of £178.78 per week. Mrs. Gibson is using this payment to employ an agency to provide the care, and this agency charge more than the trust contract rate for traditional domiciliary care of £12.77 per hour. Now, one of the ladies in that report, Wilma, did get back in touch with us again. She had a wee update for us about her dad's situation and how they had managed to bring him home.
We decided, Mum and I decided, well, and my two sisters, we could maybe take a reduced package. So we offered it, asked the social worker to see if we were to, say, take a morning and an evening call and cut out the two in the middle of the day, would it speed things up? And on the 13th of December, Dad got home. Initially, what we felt was to get my dad up in the morning, get him ready for bed at night, was probably the most challenging part of him coming home. My mum, she sort of felt, well, you know, I can still cook a meal and make him a cup of tea. So that's why. But since that, Mum hasn't been well. And I mean, it's just a complete exhaustion. So I don't know in the long term what we're going to do. We're probably going to have to look at seeing if we can actually get the 4 times a day package.
Spell out for me the impact it has on, say, for example, your mum, her husband, watching him go through an illness and the difficulties that brings, and then struggling to bring him back home where I'm sure she wants him.
Yes, I mean, I was exhausted after almost 9 weeks of running to the hospital, never named my mother, who's in her 90th year. Yes, we're delighted with Dad home, but now that the running has stopped, it's catching up with my mother. And so, as I say, there has been days where Mum has been in bed, because she's just no energy, she's not fit to get up. So, you know, and then I usually then would try and head down and help them out in some way. I can't always do that. I have health issues myself, and it's just I'm not able to do that for them.
Yeah.
I mean, every year on a person's life, it adds its challenges. And yeah, as I say, well, my mother's extremely great, good for her age, it does have an impact on her. And unfortunately now, my dad's better, my mum's worse.
That was Wilma McMillan there. And I've also been speaking to the Assistant Director of Social Service Adult Services, Kevin Keenan, about the figures. Now, I put it to him that they didn't make great reading.
Well, the figures are particularly challenging, particularly over the Christmas and New Year period. I think we're running at probably around about 300 people each day deemed medically fit for discharge. But I think I would like to emphasise that the vast majority of people do receive their care packages in a timely fashion.
Yeah, one of the figures we got was 285 in December. That basically is people that could go home, but there was no care package available for them. So surely, are all those people then in a hospital bed taking up a space for someone else that's sick, or is there a combination of that and people in a type of halfway house?
No, just on a point of clarification, Vinny, the number that you've cited are people who have been deemed medically fit. In other words, the consultant has decided that they can go. But obviously it takes time to put these arrangements in place. As I said earlier on, the vast majority of those individuals will receive a care package in a short space of time, but there are other packages that are more complex.
And at that point, though, is it right to say that, for example, in December there were 285 people taking up a bed? They were medically fit to go home, but they couldn't because of the lack of availability of a care package?
Well, they were medically fit to go, but the process hadn't perhaps started in terms of putting that package into place. Having said that, once they're deemed medically fit, possibly following a ward round, the other staff in the hospital, the social workers, the nurses, that the wheels start to turn and they have to try to put those arrangements in place.
Okay. Well, let's talk about the waiting times then. From the figures that you've given to us, 53 days for the South Eastern Trust, 210 for the Northern Trust, Western Trust, for example, 171. So are we talking about that's from the moment that the consultant says you can go home to the moment they get their care package? Or how would you outline those figures?
For those very small number of people that you're citing there may be people who have to wait a particularly long time. Mm. I have to stress that the average wait for a care package is 2 weeks, and there are many, many care packages put in place long before that.
So why, when we asked in terms of the different trusts, were we told that the Western Trust, there was someone had to wait 171 days? Was there a particular issue there, or is that just problematic? Is it symptomatic of a backlog there?
No, I don't think that's symptomatic of problems within the system. There would be a very particular set of circumstances associated with any of those very, very long waits. It might be associated with the need to make adaptations to property, or sorry, to their homes. It might have something to do with the provision of equipment. It might have to do with family resistance to the package that's been offered. I can assure you that those examples that you've cited are by far the exception rather than the rule. Just to back to what I said earlier on, the average wait somewhere in the region of about 2 weeks. Many, many people are out of hospital long before that. I would say within the system at any point in time, there'd probably be maybe 100 people who might have to wait longer than that. The obligation on the professional is to assess the person's needs and share with the individual what they feel the solution to that is. They want to do the best thing they can for the patient. Having said that, if the solution to that becomes problematic, I would expect the social worker to negotiate, discuss, and maybe fine-tune some of those arrangements in conjunction with the family. It's not impossible that families sometimes are able to fill the gap or to provide an element of service themselves. I would expect that negotiation to take place when there are particularly challenging situations.
Someone might be maybe a bit cynical, Kevin, and would say, well, look, if people are taking half what they're recommended, is it a way of getting people through the system quicker? Is that the case?
I don't think that's the case at all.
Okay.
I think the professional would attempt to adhere to the original assessment in terms of what that person requires and needs to keep them safe.
We asked you in terms of how many people are currently at home coping without help, so essentially waiting on a package. Now, the latest stats were for July 2016, and in July there were 102. So just outline for us, Kevin, what type of people they would be in terms of what they're waiting for, what situation they would be in.
It could be a situation where someone is becoming increasingly frail, maybe not able to live on their own, and they might require, once again, assistance from a domiciliary care service. They may already have an existing service, but because their condition is deteriorating, they may require an increase in that. So those are the kind of situations of the individuals in the community that I'm talking about.
But why are there so many people waiting at home, struggling to some extent, waiting on that help?
That goes back to what we talked about earlier on, Vinny. It may be about capacity in the system or the local availability of a service. What I would expect in those circumstances is that the professional would be negotiating with those people as to what alternatives there might be in the system to help them.
What do you mean by negotiate?
A professional.
Bargain them down?
Oh, no, not at all. If a professional comes up with an assessment of what a person needs and then explains to the individual that at that point in time it's the service that they've identified is not available, I think they need to explore other options.
We've looked at some of the stats, Kevin, from the different trusts, but are there particular areas in Northern Ireland that you would outline that there's a problem?
I think I wouldn't want to identify any particular locality or sort of specific geography.
Well, say for the Western Trust, I understand how you've outlined that these figures and how they should be interpreted. 171 potential days someone had to wait. It's very different to, say, for example, the Southeastern Trust, 53 days. So does that mean if you live in that Western Trust area, there might be more of a problem?
Rurality is highlighted to us as a difficulty. And that's true for all of the trusts. They do seem to have a real challenge to try to make sure that the continuity of service in some of the more remote areas of the country. And I think that's related to the availability of staff and even the logistics associated with trying to deliver a service across a widespread geography.
That is, Assistant Director of Social Services, Adult Services, Kevin Keenan there. If you are one of the people or maybe the families affected by something like this, you're waiting for a care package to get your loved one or get yourself out of hospital, 030 30 80 55 55. David is on the line. Good morning, David.
Good morning, Finny. It doesn't surprise me in the least that there's hundreds of people probably in hospital beds waiting to go home. I'm a carer myself, and I'd have got from my partner probably about 18 hours a day. But let me be honest and truthful. Nobody in my view, I don't know why anybody would want to become a carer, because to pay the carers the minimum amount of £63 that they pay them, and then when carers take ill themselves and need operations, there's no one to look after them. They can't go into hospital to get their operation done because there's no one to look after them. The system is, you're 15 minutes, that's what they give you. You give you 15 minutes, off they go, and you're left to your own ability. The whole system is a meltdown, and social services will say they don't have the money to do it. Well, that goes back to the government, and at the end of the day, that's why people are in hospital beds. It's a disaster, and no one has ever addressed the carers issue in Northern Ireland or the UK.
Do you, you mentioned that you care for your partner, David.
Yep.
Do you get any help, or is that just you from morning to night?
That's me. I'm the person who wakes up in the morning, so they're put back in bed at night. That's me. And there's thousands of people in Northern Ireland, thousands, who are doing exactly the same thing as me. And the miserable amount of money they give you for doing it is a disgrace in society. We get paid less than Job Seekers Alliance.
And how difficult is it, David, and it might seem like a silly question, but when you're with your loved one, obviously, and you want to be there to care for them, but when you feel like it's just you...
Stressful, totally stressful. And you can't get the help and support that you require or need because it's simply not there. When you ask for something, people look at carers and say carers, oh, they wash them, they give them their medication, they feed them and do that. But there's a lot more even to it than that. You have to chase hospital appointments up that hasn't arrived. You have to go with the person to the hospital, bring them back from the hospital. You have to, you know, there's 101 different things carers do. And at the end of the day, they treat carers like dirt. And that's what carers are treated like, dirt.
What kind of pressure does it put on a relationship, David, when you are
massive,
the sole carer?
Massive.
In what way?
It would make you have a breakdown. It would make you have a breakdown. There's no one there.
So from day to day, David, how do you... obviously we're not talking about your partner now, but you yourself, the carer, how do you cope?
Difficult. You have to do it. You need an operation, and I do need operations done, and there's no one there.
So your health is an issue as well?
Well, that's what happens to carers. Their health starts coming downhill, and then at the end of the day, when they need to go into hospital, they can't go because their social care package is not there, and the government doesn't put the money in. You know, our MLAs may be sitting wanting people to vote for them, but I wish you would listen to what people are saying. The health service is in meltdown, and people need to wake up and smell the coffee. It's a disaster what's going on. People do not realise what is happening.
Are you ever able to get a break yourself, David? Some time away, some time to yourself?
I had a break, not from that by myself, no. I had a break last year for a few days, and I came back again. That was the first in a number of years, quite considerable number of years. But it's just stress after stress. There's no idea what carers have to do. And no one is listening because that's why people are lying in hospitals, Danny, because there's no one there. Everybody knows in this society it's a 15-minute slot you get. That's what you get. You come in and say, would you like a cup of coffee? These carers who come in, would you like a cup of coffee? I'll wash your dishes. Bye-bye, I'll see you again. That's
obviously, and it's not necessarily a reflection on the care worker themselves. No, it's the time they're allotted. Yes. And I guess some people might say that they're happy with what they have, what they get from their trust. But going back to yourself, David, and your own situation, have you got any kind of contingency plan for when you get older and maybe you're less able to care for your partner?
That's what's happening, you see. There isn't anything there. There's nothing there to follow me up and bypass on or whatever the case may be. But there's nothing there. In society, nobody ever thinks to sit down with the carer and try and work things out. What's the best plan for me? And at the end of the day, it's a one-shoe attitude that fits all. That's what society's like.
All right, David, I want to say thanks for calling me this morning. I want to just at this point as well, because this is something when we talk about caring for ourselves and caring for others, it can put a lot of pressure, as you hear from David. And just if you ever feel like you need someone to talk to, there is Lifeline 0808 808 8000. Albert, good morning.
Good morning.
Go ahead.
I'm just raising a question that the government had a great purge in closing and the councils, closing the nursing homes run by the councils and paid for by the government. I don't know how many nursing homes are still left, but a considerable number have been closed. The result is that you're moving the backlog from one system to the other. You can't get the people out of hospital because they can't provide care. You're closing the care homes that you did have, and the whole thing's grinding to a stop.
So it's a bit of a vicious circle.
It is. So was it worthwhile closing all those council-run nursing homes?
There is an issue as well, Albert, in terms of the ageing population. So there are more and more people that need care, and then therefore that's putting more and more pressure on the health service.
Excuse me. I've lived for quite a number of years, 1934 actually. The population in the north of Ireland when I was born was about 1.4 million. Now it might be about 1.5 at the most. You can't tell me that's the only cause of it. There must be something endemic wrong with the whole system, because they only look at one thing at a time. They decide to close the nursing homes, then they have a build-up because they've been closed.
Okay,
you can't have it both ways. You can't have the nursing homes that close them and then put everybody out to homes, their own homes, and nobody there to care for them.
Okay.
And nobody there to provide the care for them.
Albert, thanks for your call this morning, Albert. Greg, you're also a carer.
Yes, I took over care of my 88-year-old mum about a year ago. Right? So I have no experience until this year of how the system works. But I'm ringing in to tell you that there is another side to this, Vinny. I mean, I'm not saying that everything's perfect. I've spent 16 hours at A&E with my mum. Like, this has been a bad year with a couple of broken hips. She's been in and out of the fold, into respite homes. But generally, the system, for me anyway, works. Can I tell you something? The people I have dealt with, the people that run the respite homes, the carers themselves, the people that come out on the care package, these are some of the loveliest people I've ever met. These people don't do that job just for money. They actually
absolutely, Greg. And of course, I said that earlier on the programme. We're not saying there's any issue in terms of the actual carers. And they're under a lot of pressure themselves. They're given a very restricted amount of time. And it's all about trying to spread the resources that they have.
But Vinny, and I can only talk about personally, but you're almost saying respite homes are like some sort of a bad thing. Like, my mum broke her hip twice this year and had to go into a respite home. She actually lives in a fold where we pay for her care. That respite home experience ensured that my mum was going back into her own flat 100% rather than just being dumped out of a hospital ward and put back in. You know, there is a system there. Of course it needs more money, and of course there's always going, people are going to have terrible experiences. Like, I can honestly say 16 hours at A&E was one of the worst experiences of my life. But, you know, the basic system works if it just had a bit more money pumped into it.
And how is your mum now, Greg?
Well, she's just, I'm saying this now because yesterday she moved out of her respite home back into her fold. You know, so she's back in amongst her own wee place. But they wouldn't let her back in until they thought she was 100% to go back in. You know, I kind of admire that ethos, you know, rather than being dumped out and put back in. Also, I heard somebody say about the CERs only come for maybe 10 minutes. I mean, everybody knows CERs are on a time package. They're there to make the food clean. But, you know, families have to be involved too. I mean, we've got a rota system with our family that my mum's visited twice a day. That's not a CERs job, you know. Families also have to take on responsibility for their own elderly relations and not just isolate them and call and keep them part of the family.